Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. By now, you've probably heard of the giant patch of plastics floating in the Pacific Ocean and things like microbeads from cosmetics turning up in waterways and the animals that inhabit them. You may have even seen reports about a plastic bag turning up in the deepest part of the ocean, the Mariana Trench. While its durability is one of the things that makes plastic so useful, it's also what's turning out to make it so dangerous. It can take centuries for some plastic materials to degrade, and more of it's winding up in the environment. On today's show, we're going to localize the issue with new data collected by the Charlotte Harbor National Estuary Program. It's been using citizen scientists to collect some baseline information on where microplastics can be found in waters across Southwest Florida. We're joined in studio by its executive director, Jennifer Hecker. Jennifer, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you very much for having us.
Have you cut down on your use of plastics, or maybe you participated in this citizen science effort too, and you'd like to share your experience? Give us a call and tell us all about it at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So let's start with a basic explanation of what's meant by microplastics. What are they?
So plastics do not naturally biodegrade. They actually break into smaller pieces and release chemicals, but they become pieces in some cases that are so small that they're not visible to the naked eye, that they're smaller than a grain of sand. And these small pieces are called microplastics.
Okay. So there are different sizes, though. There's micro, meso, and nano?
Yeah. So even within the category of microplastics, you get smaller and smaller. So there's all the way down to those that are a 16th of a human hair in size.
So how much is known about the nano-sized, little teeny-teenies?
Those are very, very difficult to detect, and only sophisticated sampling equipment can do that. So there's, of course, less science available about how prevalent those are and what exactly they're doing in the environment and in the human body.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess my next question is if they can – they barely even register, and they're hard to detect even by you have to use specialized equipment to even find them, then what's the big deal? That's the question. What are they doing?
Well, so they get actually even more dangerous as they get smaller because they don't pass through us or through the animals that are ingesting them, but they can actually be absorbed into the tissue and pass through the blood barrier into the bloodstream. So that becomes even more toxic and dangerous over time. And as these plastics continue to grow in our environment, our exposure is growing to them, and we're actually inhaling and ingesting them more and more.
And there's just no real hard data science about what that's actually doing to the tissues that they're being absorbed into?
Well, they are doing studies now. It's relatively recent. There's not any conclusions per se, but they do believe that they are causing human health issues. They know in mice that they can affect the brain. They can affect the digestive system, the liver, the kidneys. They believe that similar types of results could potentially affect humans if we are exposed too greatly. And so we are very concerned about this because it's turning up that as we're sampling more and more things, we're finding these are everywhere. They're in our foods, they're in our water. And so our exposure is more prevalent than we knew.
How do these plastics wind up in the water? I mean, is it just trash?
So it's a combination of trash, but it's also I think it's important to cover a little bit about where these come from.
Is it like a grocery bag that's become smaller and smaller and smaller, or is it just the microbeads that were from cosmetics that were banned?
So there's several different types of microplastics and sources. The most prevalent that we're finding are microfibers, and microfibers come from synthetic clothing. So anytime you're wearing polyester, acrylic or any kind of artificial plastic-based spandex, of course. There's been even articles talking about, you know, my yoga pants are polluting the water. As we wash and dry those clothes, these little synthetic microfibers are coming off of them. Those fibers are going into the water through the wastewater stream, and they're also going into the air.
Oh, so they're getting a lot out of your laundry.
Out of our laundry, we also see that a lot of the marine debris that is getting into the waterways is breaking up into fragments, into film, which comes from plastic bags. So there's different sources and different ways that this plastic is entering into the air and into the water.
Is there any – I don't know if you got this out of your most recent study. Is there a breakdown of most of it comes from clothing or most of it comes from microbeads in body wash? Or I'm wondering if there's any breakdown of who is the biggest culprit.
So right now, that's really what we're undertaking, is trying to get a geographic distribution of where we're finding these microplastics, what types of microplastics we're finding. We have the citizen scientists categorize the different types. So they learn to identify the four major types, which is film, bead, fiber, and fragment. And then they are able to do that under a microscope, count them, and catalog them. And then we are giving those to the Florida Microplastic Awareness Project site, which uploads them on a publicly accessible database and map. When we started this, we didn't see that there was any sampling going on in Southwest Florida, which is why we decided we wanted to step up and try to help. We're a partnership of different organizations with a team of volunteer citizen scientists. And so we reached out to our partners, and we had Charlotte, Sarasota, and Polk, IFAS, help us, as well as Sea Grant, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Gulf of Mexico Alliance, and Mississippi State University, all joined together with us to get the sampling done in Southwest Florida.
Well, that's a big team. We're exploring new data that's collected by the Charlotte Harbor National Estuary Program on microplastics in area waters. We're joined in studio by the organization's executive director, Jennifer Hecker. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag of GCL. I want to talk about this research and how it's citizen-involved research. How did you decide to make it a citizen-involved project?
So a lot of the research we do is working with citizen scientists. What we do is we get grant funding. In this case, the Gulf of Mexico Alliance provided a grant for the equipment. We helped to assemble that equipment. Then we were trained and enabled to, in turn, train our citizen scientists how to utilize the equipment to conduct the sampling.
So how many people did you have all together? How many citizens stepped up to do this?
Well, it was a large group, and some of them also were people who were working with these different partner or entities as well, so we don't have a solid number. But basically, we were able to cover Polk, Charlotte, Sarasota, and Lee counties with our sampling efforts.
So you went out – these people went out and just got a little tube of water? Or how did that work?
So they were sampling, in some cases, just water, and in other cases, for sediments and water. There are different ways of sampling each of those, but we gave them kits and we trained them how to utilize those kits to be able to conduct that sampling. And we did find that we had 87% of the samples collected with some microplastic in it. So it was somewhat shocking to us because, again, I mean, we think of our waters as generally pretty clean, away from types of industries that would generate this waste, and yet we did find it all over our region.
Did you find mostly fibers in our area or other things?
We did find all different types of things, but I think fibers were the most prevalent in our area, and that makes sense because of the synthetic clothing, the washing and drying of it. It would be a common source of that.
Are there any places that you didn't find any microplastics?
There were a few places, four different areas that we sampled where we did not detect plastics in the samples we collected. That doesn't mean that there wouldn't be any. It just means that on that event, on that location, we didn't detect them. So that was encouraging. But there were areas where it was very high, where most of the samples, if not all of them, had these plastics. We found it also in the sediments and, again, across freshwater systems and saltwater systems. So that's not atypical. This is a worldwide problem that affects ice up in the Arctic. It affects fresh and saltwater systems throughout the world.
How long do you think this has been a problem?
They started detecting this in the early 70s, and it's become a larger and larger issue as we continue to grow the amount of plastics we're using in our daily life. The amount of plastics that are entering our waterways is increasing. Now about about 1 million plastic bottles are sold every single minute. And that's not – that's just for beverages, not other types of bottling. We're tossing away millions of straws. We use 1 trillion plastic bags worldwide every year. So that all equivalent to about 9 million tons of plastic waste that's entering up into our oceans every year at this point. And we know that that's growing almost exponentially.
Do you feel like the solution is banning plastics? I mean, we did see at Fort Myers Beach, they banned the plastic straws after we saw the horribly upsetting video of the little sea turtle that had a straw in his nose. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I think everybody saw that, it feels like. But it was disturbing to see that. And a lot of places did ban plastic straws. Do you think things like that are going to have an impact on this? Or with the number of the microfibers from clothing, is it going to be possible to get ahead of that?
I think that any way we can reduce our plastics helps. We definitely do need to look at plastic alternatives. New technologies are developing better and better alternatives, corn-based products that feel like a plastic straw or feel like a plastic fork but are actually totally biodegradable. Those are preferable. We need to prevent this type of pollution at its source, which means not generating it to begin with, to not buy products that are synthetic, to look for natural alternatives wherever possible.
And yoga pants that are made of cotton.
Cotton is a fabulous, you know, rayon. I mentioned earlier that's actually a natural product. I mean, bamboo. There's so many new natural fibers that are available. And we're learning now that this is not only an environmental problem. This is a huge public health risk and concern at this point. And so we really do need, with urgency, to move away from plastics to look for more sustainable alternatives.
So you said that there were a couple places that didn't show much in the way of plastics. Were those places highly populated places, or were they way off the beaten path?
Some of them were highly populated. It, again, can go to how it was sampled. We might want to go back and replicate. We're hoping to do this annually at this point.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't give too much credence to this initial sampling. It's a good baseline first cut.
Yeah, because you kind of need to see the trend, right?
Right, right. But
I would imagine that the weather could have an impact. You know, sometimes, I mean, the Gulf looks terrible because there has been a weather system and it's just churned everything up. And I imagine it does that to microplastics too.
Yeah, so they can be released through wave action. They can also be come through the air as atmospheric deposition. So that's how they're finding them in Arctic ice. In the most remote corners of the world, there are finding lots and lots of microplastics. So it's not necessarily entirely correlated to human population, but there does seem to be a lot of studies showing that where there's more population, there tends to be more plastics.
As you indicated earlier, that this is a public health issue too. It's not just, you know, we're being dirty and gross. We're actually causing problems that could have an impact on our health. And I always found it interesting when we've done shows about this. We talk about the small fish ingesting a little bit of these microplastics, and then it becomes part of that fish, which is then eaten by a bigger fish. Tell me a little bit about that chain that happens.
Sure. So, you know, plastics are damaging in many ways. I mean, they're made of a bunch of chemicals. 78% of the chemicals that are used in plastics are considered to be primary pollutants by the US EPA. So those chemicals are released into the organism who ingests that. A lot of times these particles are so small that, again, they can go into the tissue itself. They are the size, in some cases, of a red blood cell. So they're very tiny and they can be assimilated into the body. And that can create all sorts of different problems, from physical damage to chemical problems. They can affect the operation of organs. They can affect the bloodstream. And, you know, we're concerned that over time, as we increasingly are exposed, we're going to have more and more of this in our bloodstream, in our tissue. And so there are points where in other species, they're already seeing a tipping point where those species are starting to hit mortality because of ingesting too much plastics. There was a study on shorebirds, one particular bird species that's been tracked since the 70s. And in the 70s, it only had a few pieces of plastic. But now they, on average, have over 200 pieces of plastics identified inside them. And that is now causing mortality of that species. So, you know, we do know from other studies that this can have serious health consequences. And we're concerned about over time what this could be for human health. So that's why we need to address it now.
Well, we have, you know, the watch list every once in a while with fish because of mercury or whatever kind of pollutant or contaminant has gotten into the fish. Do you anticipate there might come a day when there are certain fish that people are warned not to eat because of plastic contamination of the animal and its flesh?
Yes. I think already there's enough science to say that a lot of the filter feeders have a large amount of plastics in them. There's been studies of farm-raised mussels and oysters. They found that people who consume that can be exposed to about 11,000 pieces of microplastic a year from that type of diet, which that's based on a European consumption rate, which is not as high as maybe some native cultures that would eat even more seafood than that. So you need to really think about the seafood you're consuming. In some cases, maybe even be judicious and selective about what you're eating and how much you eat because of the concerns of this.
Would you eat farmed clams, knowing what you know about microplastics
Personally,
and filter feeders?
I do not eat any shellfish just because I work on water quality so much that I know that filter feeders are like the first line that filters out those pollutants. And so when you're ingesting them, you are generally taking in a larger amount. But also, as you mentioned, as things go up the food chain, they can actually bioaccumulate. So there are larger and larger animals and fish that eat those smaller base food chain species. And if you eat those, you're even eating usually a higher magnitude of the pollution. So that's, for instance, why they don't suggest you don't eat very much tuna because of the mercury. So we know that it bioaccumulates because tuna is one of the top fish in the food chain in the sea. So, you know, we are aware that there's already some concerns. They're finding it, though, in honey. They're finding it in bottled water. There was a study just released where they looked at all different types, 11 brands of bottled water, and they found that most bottled water contains a significant amount of microplastic pollution at this point.
That didn't come from the bottle itself that it's in?
No. It came in many cases from the source. And so that's one of the things we need to look at. Out of 11 brands, they found that, you know, on average, there was about 325 particles of microplastic in every liter. And, you know, none of the bottles had, zero in all cases. They would take multiple bottles to look at. But they did find some had over 10,000 particles per liter, the worst. And then the best had about 0 to 74 in different tests. Shows you that this is a really ubiquitous problem. Our wastewater plants are not they're not outfitted with equipment at this point that can adequately address some of these types of pollution.
Is there equipment that can do that?
That is in research and development, and they're looking at trying to develop new technologies that can. Because, you know, this is now being realized to be a widespread public water supply issue.
It's almost like you want to have the wastewater go over a big bed of oysters and clams that you don't eat to filter all of that out as much as you can. So what's next in your research? We've done this one baseline study and you're hoping to do this again next year. Are you wanting to do this on an annual basis?
Yes, we do. We want to do it on an annual basis, continue to collect more data. I think that, you know, having a better understanding of where and how much this is occurring in our environment will make us better prepared in addressing it. But I think it is a national and global issue. And there is a UN initiative that 10 countries have already agreed to join in on, including Indonesia, to reduce their use of plastics and marine litter. Any kind of policies that are against plan obsolescence or disposables or encourage the public procurement of green alternatives can be very impactive and can really help to prevent this type of pollution.
Well, that is all the time that we have for this part of the show, but I want to thank my guest, Jennifer Hecker. She's the executive director of the Charlotte Harbor National Estuary Program. Jennifer, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
And I also want to thank my earlier guests from our segment about summertime travel. We had Connie Moody and Karen Berger from the Preferred Travel of Naples, and also Marcia Cutt and Mark Jenkins from the AAA Auto Club. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary, Rachel Iacobone, and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.